Kildare Today with Owen Beattie.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
Now, the Reserve Defence Forces is suffering from the impact of a change in what it describes as nonsensical retirement rules, which they say is getting rid of members unnecessarily and resulting in numbers being severely depleted. All reservists who enlisted before October 2005 are allowed to serve until the age of 60. However, anyone enlisted after that date must retire at the age of 50. Neil Richardson, General Secretary of the Reserve Defence Force Representative Association, is on the line, and Cathal Berry, Independent TD for Kildare South and former Deputy Commander of the Army Ranger Wing, is with us in studio. Neil, we might go to you first on the phone lines. Just describe to us again what this actually means and why this change came into effect.
Well, it's a very good question to ask, actually, as to why this change came into effect, because we're not entirely sure. There doesn't seem to be any practical reason behind it. So a lot of your listeners may recall that the RDF, as it is now known, was previously known as the FCA, and it's the name by which the organisation is best remembered. So in 2005, in October of that year, the FCA ceased to exist and the RDF was brought into existence, and that's when they introduced this regulatory change. So for whatever reason, and we're not quite sure of the logic behind it, anybody, as you rightly said, enlisted after this date had to leave the organisation at 50, whereas those who enlisted before were allowed to serve on to 60. Now, what we're starting to see is some individuals who would have enlisted in the years immediately following this change, so say 2006, 2007, and would have enlisted, say, in their late 20s, early 30s, as members of the reserve are allowed to do. They're allowed to join up to an older age than members of the permanent defence forces. So some of these individuals are starting to hit the age of 50 now and are being forced to retire, despite the fact that their colleagues, some of whom may have only enlisted a few months earlier, can serve for another 10 years. So we have the likes of fitness testing or medical checks in order to ensure that people are physically capable of doing the job that they are required to do within the reserve. So arbitrarily getting rid of people at the age of 50, just on age grounds alone, to us seems incredibly inappropriate. And in the middle of a retention crisis that is affecting both the PDF and the RDF, these are individuals who want to stay serving but are being asked to leave.
On that retention crisis, we spoke to you 3 or 4 weeks ago, Neil, where you were saying that the strength of the RDF has fallen significantly in recent years, and within the next 2 or 3 years, if it keeps going in that direction, there might not be an RDF.
Well, that would be our view, and unfortunately it has been a straight line graph over the last couple of years in an ever decreasing fashion. There are about 750 active Army reservists out there. There should be 3,800, and there are approximately 60 active Naval Service reservists around the state, and there should be at least 200 of those. So we're getting to the point, as has been discussed before, where even if we were to take on new blood in large numbers in the morning, our numbers of instructors to actually train these people and induct them into the organisation is getting forever smaller. So much so that we expect to reach a point in the next couple of years where we simply will not be able to sustain ourselves without some sort of dramatic action between now and then.
Okay, Cathal Berry, just to bring you in on this then, is this not an archaic system, you know, that somebody who joined the RDF in 2005, 2006 in their 30s will now have to retire because they're hitting the age of 50? I mean, 50's quite young, isn't it?
Yeah, very young, and I agree entirely with you. It's a ridiculous system. And there's an elder wisdom to what we were doing 20-odd years ago. And if it was okay 20 years ago to serve until 60, it should be okay today as well. We should be having a proper discussion about the Reserve Defence Force this morning. We should be encouraging people who are 18 or 19 to join. We should be extolling the virtues of it as an excellent organisation, that you can go overseas and you can learn loads of skills. But unfortunately, we're focusing again on a negative story, which is internal housekeeping, which shouldn't exist at all. So this is a stroke of a pen issue. This can be solved with one ministerial stroke of a pen, and we should be doing it as soon as possible.
Do you think maybe there's not enough publicity publicity given to the Reserve Defence Forces that people who want to join the Defence Forces are going for maybe the front line, so to speak, rather than the Reserve Defence Forces, and they're being left behind a little bit?
Yeah, I agree entirely. So I joined the Reserve Defence Force, or the FCA as it was called, back in 1995. There was 13,000 reservists then, and it was an excellent organisation. It was a real kind of a feeder organisation for the regular Defence Force as well. So people would join the FCA or the Reserve Defence Force, test the water, see that they like it, and then say, I wouldn't mind doing this full-time as a professional, then join the regular Defence Force thereafter. So it's a wonderful organisation, and it's just a pity that it's been utterly decimated, and it has been utterly decimated. It works all over the world. Every country in the world has a Reserve Defence Force that they can mobilise and activate for a couple of days or a couple of weeks in a national emergency, and then deactivate then afterwards. So it's a really big shame that the system doesn't work in Ireland. It should be working, and it can work. All it requires is a bit of ministerial intervention.
And I put the same question to you that I put to Neil at the outset. Why is this rule in place, do we know, that at the age of 50 you have to retire from the RDF?
So there was a similar rule brought in 1995 in the regular Defence Force, the Permanent Defence Force, and the idea was back then that the Defence Force was labelled as a kind of a dad's army. The age profile was quite high. So they brought in this rule to try and reduce the age profile. It was probably relevant at the time for a few years, but utterly irrelevant now. And think about policy is it should be changing in line with circumstances. And there's a retention crisis in both the Reserve Defence Force and the regular Defence Force at the moment, and we should be amending our policy accordingly.
Okay, Neil, what do you think the answer is here? Obviously, you know, you're calling for this rule to be changed and reversed, but this is only the tip of the iceberg, as we've heard from you previously. There's other issues at play.
As Deputy Berry rightly said, what's really needed here is a much larger conversation and debate about the future of the reserve, what it's meant for, and then how it's going to be regulated and how it's going to be structured. Unfortunately, for many, many decades, the state, I don't think, has never really known what it wants its reserve to do or what its reserve is for. So it ends up existing in this sort of limbo state between being a part-time military force there to augment the PDF when needed or to provide additional skills or surge capacity, whatever it might be, and then somehow being treated almost kind of like a sort of a volunteer organization that you tip in and out of, and it's not really taken very seriously. So in many ways, the reserve has to be brought into the 21st century. And as the deputy rightly said, every other military in the world, every other progressive military utilizes its reserves as a central aspect or central element of its force. Whereas in Ireland at present, it has been very, very peripheral, definitely in the past couple of decades, and it really shouldn't be the case. That's not what a reserve is for.
Okay, Carl, the solution here is quite simple, as you said, is it not?
Absolutely. So I'd be raising with Micheál Martin, the Taoiseach and Minister of Defence, on Tuesday, and I have a slot with Pascal Donoghue then on Thursday morning in the Dáil Chamber as well. So I'll raise the issue there. It is very, very simple. It's what's called a statutory instrument, or a DFR, so it can be changed quite literally with the stroke of a ministerial pen. If 60 years of age was a good cut-off age back in 2004, it's a good cut-off age today, and I think we should be amending our policies accordingly.
Okay, Cathal, you might stay with us for a moment. Neil Richardson, General Secretary of the Reserve Defence Force Representative Association, critical of what it describes as a change in nonsensical retirement rules. Thanks for joining us this morning, Neil. Just before we let you go, Cathal, there was some pushback, I see, from People Before Profit regarding these training exercises that the Irish Defence Forces are going to be carrying out with Ukraine. Can you tell us a little bit about those training exercises, what it means, and do you think it's a positive move, and why is there that pushback?
So I think it's a hugely positive move. I'd be very much in favour of it. What the state have decided to do is provide about 30 military personnel, Irish military personnel, to go to Germany and Poland and to train up the Ukrainian armed forces in two areas primarily. It's in demining and it's in medical training. And a lot of people don't know this, but UCD are actually out there at the moment, the medical school in UCD, and it's a wonderfully progressive programme. They actually have people on the ground in Poland and remotely, and they're training the Ukrainian military in medical training at the moment. So I think it's very, very positive. I'd be hugely supportive of it, and I think it's the least we can do from a Ukrainian point of view.
Okay, what about the argument from People Before Profit that it's kind of undermining Ireland's neutrality, is it?
Not even remotely. So Ireland's neutrality means that we don't join any formal military alliance. This does not involve us joining any formal military alliance. Therefore, there's no threat whatsoever to our neutrality. In fact, to be honest, I think if we didn't do it, that would be a breach of our traditional policy of neutrality. If you think back to the Second World War, Ireland was described as being neutral on the side of the Allies. So we provided weather forecasting, intelligence updates, we allowed American aircraft to land in Fines. We allowed British aircraft to take off and fly over Donegal. So that's when our neutrality was first declared in 1939, and that's what we did during the Second World War. And if we were neutral on the side of the Allies during the Second World War, I think we should be neutral on the side of the Ukrainians during this conflict.
Okay, on that note, Cathal Berry, independent TD for Kildare South, former deputy commander of the Army Ranger Wing. Thanks for joining us this morning, Cathal. We'll take a break. Keep your messages coming in to us, 0833 97 97 97. And after the break, we'll be speaking to Kildare parents calling for more ASD units in primary schools for children with special needs.
Kildare Today with Owen Beattie.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
Okay, we're going to go to the Naas area now, where Nicola Erasmus joins us on the line. She's owner and manager of Inspire Child Development School in the Naas area. Herself and a number of parents of children that attend her special school in Naas are calling for more ASD units in primary schools for children with special needs. Nicola, good morning and thanks for joining us.
Morning, Aaron. Thank you so much.
Before we get to the issue at hand here, tell us a bit about yourself and a bit about the school that you run in Naas.
Well, we have an early intervention preschool. So what that means is we run through the home tuition grant provided by the government, and we have two classes, a morning and an afternoon class of six children each. We have five teachers with those children. And myself, I provide occupational therapy. I work alongside a fantastic speech and language therapist, Jenny Hillier. And in that manner, we can give the children this holistic kind of all-round early intervention, which we know from research is key, 0 to 5. We know is absolutely key in providing that intervention with children of a diagnosis, especially of autism.
Okay, and the issue then that you're coming across and that parents are bringing to you is that when these children are leaving your preschool and going to primary school, they have to go through mainstream and that transition is very, very difficult. Is that right?
Absolutely. It's heartbreaking. Like, I'm seeing parents come to the door, and this is why this opportunity is so important, that I can be some kind of voice for parents who are exhausted, they're tired, they don't necessarily have the time or the energy to be fighting for their children. That's what it is. They have to fight all the time to get access to these ASD classes. And also, it's not necessarily the place for some of these children's learning journey to carry on. You know, so they're exhausted. Some of our parents have applied to 30 schools. And one parent came to me yesterday and she said, well, we've been allocated a place in County Meath and the child has to sit on a bus for 40 minutes. You know, and his sensory needs are high. He needs lots of movement all the time. So, you know, it's so disrespectful to the child, to the parents. You know, it's not working for anybody. The system is broken.
I was made aware of a situation in one particular town, which I won't name, in Kildare, and there were 6 or 7 parents with children with special needs saying that there is a demand for an ASD unit in this school, but they're being met with pushback and they can't get an ASD unit. So we now have these special needs children going into mainstream schools, and they're ultimately, the worry from the parents' point of view is the children are going to struggle.
Absolutely. And not only the children, absolutely, because we're child-centred and focused on the child, but it's so unfair to the teachers. You know, the SNA allocation in the primary schools isn't adequate. So, for instance, I go in and I support some schools and earlier services because they don't, through no fault of their own, don't necessarily have the knowledge or the skill set to provide the resources for these children. And one of the schools, I mean, there were 5 children in her class with one SNA and herself, and struggling through the day with the children. They aren't the resources there for them.
Okay, there's a message after coming in to us, and I think this puts it really into perspective. And it says, hello, I have a little boy, Matt, who's 5 with ASD and non-verbal. Our local school in Salons has no ASD class, which means we had to apply to other schools. We've applied to 32 schools all around Kildare, and so far we've received 24 refusals. Most of those refusals are due to us not being in the school's parish or catchment area, but where are we supposed to go when the school in our catchment area doesn't have a class for my son? Unfortunately, Matt would not cope in a mainstream environment, and all the work we have been doing with him in the last year would be pretty much thrown out the window if he was placed in mainstream. We shouldn't have to settle for less for our children. They deserve the best, and they deserve to be in the right educational environment that is suitable for them. Our daughter, who is neurotypical, goes to the Salon School, so not only will we have two children at two different schools, but we'll have to put them on a bus or another transport for at least 30 to 40 minutes each way. We've seen firsthand how the right support can help Matt become his best self, and they're very, very complimentary of the work that you're doing, Nicola, in that school. Stay with us for a moment, because Fianna Fáil Senator Fiona O'Loughlin joins us as well. Good morning, Fiona.
Good morning to you, Owen, and of course to Nicola.
You've been listening to this, Fiona, and I know you're aware of the situation that is facing parents, particularly in the south of the county, but right across Kildare, this is very, very difficult from a parent's point of view.
Oh, look, it is, absolutely. And Nicola used the word heartbreaking earlier, and I would echo that. And I absolutely appreciate Nicola's advocacy on behalf of the parents, because, as she said, and I'm dealing with a particular situation at the moment, which isn't exactly around this, but it's related. And the mum just said to me during the week, she said, I am just so tired of fighting all the time and fighting so hard for, in this case, her daughter, in relation to what she needs and what she deserves and the supports that she needs. And it's a constant battle all of the time. And what can I say? I mean, yeah, as you say, you know, South Kildare, North Kildare, there should be no borders in relation to trying to support parents and children who need it. And I'm certainly not on here to defend the situation at the moment, but just to say, I did a quick analysis last night of the areas that have the ASD classes over Kildare. And it was interesting to note, and this may be an issue, that in the south of the county, and I'm just talking about the South Kildare part of the constituency as opposed to including Meath, comparing that with North Kildare, we have 46 ASD classes and North Kildare has 33. So straight away, that seems to be a glaring gap. Now, there are two in Salons. I don't know the particular situation, but again, I'm happy to help anybody across Kildare. And you spoke about a particular town, their own. If you want to give me the details off air, I'm happy to do it. But we're looking at a lot of new, there's been 14 new ASD classes just this particular school year. And you may remember quite some time ago, actually possibly before your time, Owen, there was only two secondary school ASD classes, and I was on the air night and day, and we now have 26. So we're definitely improving. Where the issues are, as Nicola said, at the stage where children are starting primary school. Rathangan, for example, 3 years ago, had no ASD class. We have two at the moment. The boys' school have applied for a second one, and they have 18 on that waiting list. Not all from there, some from other areas. But it's exactly as Nicola says, when parents can't find a place within their local town, understandably, they're applying for other areas, and we're looking then at transport challenges as well. Yeah. Every single new large extension or school building, absolutely now it's mandatory, have to have ASD classes. And that's very welcome. Trying to play catch up and trying to put in place something that supports the existing families that need a place is a huge challenge.
Okay, and I mean, the argument that's being made, Fiona, is that some schools or some areas are saying that there is no need or there's no demand for ASD classes, but we have parents who are contacting us saying that, you know, there is demand, there is a need. Now, that listener that contacted us there by text said that their local school, Salins, has no ASD class and they've been trying to get into that. So, and you're saying that there's two classes in Salins.
And I had a quick look, because you can appreciate I'm not as familiar with the details in North Kildare, but I had a quick look last night, and on what I could see, now I stand to be corrected, but there was two listed for Salins, but I'm happy to clarify that, and I know James Lawless will absolutely work on it as well, and I'm hoping to have a call with him later on. There absolutely is a need. Any school that says there's no need is wrong, in my view, because in every single area we have, I suppose, it's a good thing and it's a bad thing. In terms of children are getting assessments generally earlier. When children are born with an obvious intellectual disability, such as Down syndrome, plans can be put in place and the department can recognise, okay, this child, you know, in 4 years' time will be hopefully starting a mainstream school but will need those extra supports. Mm. When there are children that are assessed at a later stage, and generally speaking, those assessments are coming at an earlier stage than they would have done before. And that's what's causing, shall we say, you know, the situation where there are a lot more children presenting on the autism spectrum. And that's where the pinch point, if you want, in terms of trying to ensure the planning that there is enough. But I most certainly, you know, could not stand over any situation or any statement, any school saying that there is no need or no demand, because there 100% is a demand in every community, in every town. And that's why, in terms of future planning projects, the Department of Education is trying to get ahead of it. The problem is those that are looking for places now and are being left behind. And the department absolutely has to respond. Under the Epson Act that came in 2004, basically every child with an intellectual disability has to be offered a place in their local school if that suits them. Obviously, okay. We have four special schools, and those schools do a really, really important job as well. It's important we have those, because other children that have substantial needs may be better suited to go to those.
Okay, Nicola, your reaction to what you're hearing this morning?
Yeah, I mean, I understand that a lot has taken place, but I do feel that there needs to be a little bit more urgency around it, and that we need to see actual buildings going up. Like, I am so in such a privileged position that I have the NACE Racecourse behind me. They've been so patient, you know, when we're trying to jump through all the hoops of all the admin of setting up our service. But, for instance, something as basic as I can't access, like, I have a huge waiting list, and I can't access a building to be able to open another one, which there is a huge need for. And in terms of the special schools as well, like, I know, for instance, Saplings has close to a three-year waiting list. I mean, that's just colossal. I mean, there needs to be a lot more urgency around providing these facilities for these children. And also, you know, on paper, Ireland is one of the richest countries in the world. But, like, why doesn't it feel like this on the ground?
Okay, there's another message in here to say I have twin girls, both with diagnosis of autism. We have applied to 24 schools around Kildare and have got no place for our girls. We have now been told our next option is mainstream or to travel 45 minutes to an hour to another school. The girls attend Inspire with Nikki and have come on so much in 2 years. With the right supports and therapies, going into mainstream would completely set them back. Our children deserve what every other child gets to be a part of their community and to attend local schools. There was another one in here says, good morning, Owen. Just listening about special needs children in special schools. This has been going on for years. Children are neglected, but then you have children who want to be addressed. So, that's another one there that came in from Mary. Okay, just Nicola, we'll let you go. Thanks so much for raising that with us this
You're
morning.
So welcome.
We'll follow up on it indeed.
Yeah.
And thanks indeed to Nicola. That's Nicola Erasmus, owner and manager of Inspire Child Development School in Naas. Fiona, a couple of issues before I let you go. One here says, my daughter works in a primary school in the county. We won't say where. There's no ASD class. A new school is due to be built, but the principal doesn't seem keen on incorporating this. She thought it was mandatory. Is it mandatory?
It is 100% mandatory.
Okay, it's absolutely mandatory. So that answers that question. And finally, JD has been in touch with us to say that you might let our local representatives know that there's an illegal encampment gathering on the Curra racecourse again. I'm sure you're aware of this, Fiona.
I hadn't actually heard of that. That must have just happened this morning or yesterday. Look, here we go again. Shocking. Obviously, I'll do my best to deal with that after this call.
Okay, thanks indeed to Fiona O'Loughlin, Fianna Fáil Senator there. Thanks to JD for letting us know about that. And I know Fiona has raised that in the Shannon a number of times, so she'll follow up on it. But yeah, the illegal encampments, here we go again, into spring, into summer. And there's already one as well on the new Salins Bypass, which we mentioned before, and also out at Great Connell in Newbridge, which is causing significant issues as well. Let's go to the north of the county then, and to the Selbridge Leixlip Municipal District, where independent councillor Ida Cusson is on the line. Good morning, Ida.
Morning, Owen.
Did you get a breakdown from the council of the works in respect of the municipal district footpath infill and renewal schemes?
We did, and the last two on the list were the kind of two, I suppose, I really wanted to know more about. So it gave the full list, and then it shows there we do have the funding to do the footpath that will really connect all the bits between the Loughlinstown Road up to the brewery on the Dublin Road, and they're going ahead. The money is there, and as soon as Irish Water are off the Dublin Road, so we have to, off the Kildare part of the Dublin Road, then we will move to do those. But obviously we won't bring any more works onto that road until they're gone. And just that if listeners are probably wondering about the Irish Water works on the Dublin Road, the works currently in the Kildare end here are a mains diversion, but the roadworks proper will be recommencing again. Well, some of them have started this week, sorry, up until the 30th or so. At that stage, we'll be up to Young's Cross. Now, that's been manned and it seems to be working okay, despite some glitch with the lights, I think the temporary lights yesterday or so.
Okay, you might explain the following to me, Ida. You wanted the council to agree a time frame to roll out the registered permit holders awareness campaign for disposal of refuse or unwanted items.
Yeah, it's something that I had a motion in looking to do this before, because you'll see everywhere on Facebook and social media places, anybody know anybody who takes rubbish and, who take away bulk items from the garden or whatever, that sort of stuff. There is a requirement to only use a registered permit holder, and they're the only persons who should be collecting refuse or things from a home that way. So we also need a campaign to explain that, but also to make it easier for people to know how to check the register. So it's not the easiest thing to know how or if a person has. So let's get a campaign that will highlight the requirement to have and then make it easy to actually check that they do have the permit.
Okay, and finally then, Ida, because we're tight for time this morning, are the council going to provide an outline of the time frame and an opportunity for input into the finalising of the outdoor gym equipment in Selbridge?
Yeah, there again, we've met many times. We've looked for the outdoor gym equipment and we have the funding for it. We tentatively agreed places for it back in August of last year. It was to be done after Christmas, which, I felt February, let's ask where it's at now. And the answer then was that there was going to be an engagement, a re-engagement process again with some of the youth in the area, as there is the ongoing youth facilities programme underway. But we did have actually already engaged with them actually way back, and in September of last year when we would have met to follow up on the youth facilities, it was highlighted they also would look, be looking for outdoor gym equipment and that. But they did identify some places. So I did ask, like, you know, surely we don't have to keep re-asking and re-asking, can we not just get on and do? And elderly persons, we're an age-friendly town, and in fact, age-friendly is anyone over 55, by the way. And they are actively also looking for activity equipment that would be outside in the area to use. So it's not only for youth, it's for everyone. And just keeping the pressure on to see can we get it ASAP.
OK, that's Independent Councillor on the Selbridge Leixlip Municipal District, Ida Cusson. Thanks for your time, Ida. Just some more of the messages that have come in to us regarding that encampment on the Curragh around the race course. A listener says that they've been there since Tuesday of this week. So Fiona O'Loughlin is listening, just so you have that in mind, Fiona. And also another one came in regarding the ASD units. This listener says, this is ridiculous. There isn't enough classes. Classes only have six places for the child's or the children's years in that school, not six per year. My son is nearly five and non-verbal. He cannot go to mainstream. They won't accept him. As for early assessment, it isn't by the HSE, as I'm told. I have to wait 2 years. So on top of the disgraceful attitude to children with special needs education, it's also just as bad with getting assessed. You also say, I've applied to over 20 schools and already been rejected by over half. Most have zero places, with our CINO is well aware, but still tells us that we must waste our time applying. I'm 18 and 19 on many waiting lists, being rejected as not from that parish. Thanks indeed for that message. And yeah, it's just to highlight it, to bring it to the public domain, the struggles that parents are facing and the fight that parents have to keep fighting when trying to get places for their children.